so I spotted some antlers moving, and I kind of waited there for a minute. About 5 minutes later, when he turned to the right a little bit, I could see that coat hanger cheater on the one side. I looked over to Russ, and I'm like, dude, you're not going to believe. I said, he's right here, 150 yards right here below us, dude, just bedded down.
Sometimes we forget that the guy that's behind the trigger is not us. Even though you may be able to make that shot under that kind of pressure and, you know, whatever, but the guy that's coming with you may not have that experience, may not have that, you know, be practiced in that.
I had one guy, we're walking through the Quakies, and dude, all I hear is a gunshot right behind me. I'm like, dude, what are you doing? He's like, oh, dude, I just shot a freaking stud deer. I'm like, you didn't even let me glass it before you shot. He's like, oh, no, dude, I can see it down there in the trees. I'm like, all right, take your shell out and let's go down there and take a look at it. Dude, we get down there. He shot this freaking little tiny, it was maybe like a
120.
12-inch, yeah, 12-inch 2x2. And I'm like, are you serious, bro? Next thing I knew, my dad's like, here he comes. He's going to be out here in like 2 seconds. He said, let out one more grunt. I grunted, and that bull came out and started raking some brush. And I think he ended up being like 17 yards when the dog shot with his bow. And he went about 50 yards, and we kind of had to get back on him to get a second shot. But he ended up getting that bull. I think he was like 46 inches wide. But yeah, that was a pretty cool experience.
Welcome to Days in the Wild Big Game Hunting Podcast, brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags. Couple things before we jump into this episode. Please, you heard me say a million times, go give us a review on iTunes. Helps me keep this podcast free and helps with the ratings. Also, go check out Phoenix Shooting Bags. If you use our promo code John Stallone, all one word, you save 20% off on anything. And it's not just shooting bags. They do glassing pads. They're working on some other really cool stuff coming up here for the hunter, bow hunters also. So go check them out, phoenixshootingbags.com. And if you're looking for a really good hunt, I have some really good opportunities for you. Hit us up on daysinthewild.com or check out my blog, johnstallone.me, and send us an email. If you're looking to do a coos deer hunt, javelina, mule deer in South Dakota, we got some opportunities in California as well. So give me a call if you're looking to do something different this year and like to get on a special hunt, Days in the Wild Outfitters. And we'll take care of you. Without further ado, let's jump into this episode. Hi, welcome to Days in the Wild Big Game Hunting Podcast, brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags. Today we are kicking off a series called Lessons Learned. And it's not too different from our storytelling sessions, but we're really looking for stories, different species, and Ed Woolley is going to be our first guest in this series. We're going to talk about mule deer hunting. The idea is to listen to people's stories and learn those lessons that change the way we hunt and so on and so forth. So anyway, what's going on, Ed? How's it going?
What's going on, John?
Same old shit, different stink, man. Just running around. I had to play Mr. Mom a little bit this morning. The reason why I was a little late to the podcast, I had to bring my daughter to. She's got a summer school program that she's doing for math. So, and my wife, I forgot my wife had to work today, and I was. Anyway, so you got to juggle it all.
Yeah, I play that same role on Tuesdays and Thursdays while my wife teaches dance.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
So why don't you give us a little rundown about yourself? And then
Ed Woolston Hume, 35, from northern Utah. Been hunting for probably since I was old enough to shoot a BB gun. And then my dad's owned an outfitting company for over 40 years, so I kind of grew up doing a lot of guiding, and so that's kind of where I'm at. I've got my wife and two kids, and I'm a full-time IT / web admin, and then I have a big game mineral business, and then do some graphic and web stuff on the side.
What's the name of your mineral company again?
It's the Awesome Sauce Mineral.
Awesome Sauce. That's what it was. I knew it. I couldn't remember exactly. I knew it was something really catchy. And I, for some reason, my brain wasn't, couldn't remember. And then you run, you got the Muley Tines on this, your Instagram.
Yep. Yep. Muley Tines, my kind of like my outdoor blog business that I help book stuff for outfitters and then do some marketing stuff for outdoor hunting product related stuff.
Awesome. So you heard in my intro what we're looking to do here. So if you got a couple stories you could share with us, you know, kind of paint the picture, be as detailed as possible, and how it all went down and how that changed the way you hunt mule deer, that'd be great.
Yeah, so I mean, I've always been the type of guy that always has to have action. So for me to sit and glass for 2 or 3 hours is probably not common. But this first hunting story was with a buddy of mine, Russ Lester. He flew out to hunt deer with us, and he's hunted with us for quite a few years, a pretty good family friend. And we'd been watching this double inline buck with a coat hanger cheater. And we tried to kill him, I don't know, probably 3 or 4 weeks before Russ got there, but just a smart old buck, and we could never just nail him down in his bed. And so we kind of figured out where he was going to feed and where he was bedding. And so the week Russ was out there, my dad was actually guiding him, and they'd sat there for 4 days straight and couldn't kill this buck. Well, Friday came, and my dad had to go to one of my nephew's football games. And so he said, "Hey, you want to take Russ out since you're done with your client?" I said, "Yeah." And so me and Russ made a game plan. And so to hunt this area, we parked up high and came down because the wind was going up. So we didn't want the buck to wind us. Mm-hmm. So I knew I was going to have to pretty much sit all night. And so, which, like I say, I don't like sitting very much, but we parked the Jeep, jumped the fence, started walking down through the Quakies, and there was like a little rolling. We called it the shelves is what we called it, because when you get to the edge, there's like it rolls down probably like 100 yards and then kind of plateaus out and then goes down another probably 100 yards. And then there's like it's not like an open pasture, but like the Quakies open up to where you can see it. And that's where that buck was going back and forth to water. And then he'd come back to bed down. So I told Ross, I said, "Dude, let's just sit here and wait him out all night, because he's got to be crossing. This is where everybody's been seeing him." And dude, it was so crazy. We no more sat down, and I bet it was, I don't know, 20 minutes. I had my binoculars up looking through the trees, because there was kind of like a real thick spot on the left and it opened up on the right. And I was just panning across there, and this buck had a really unique coat. It was really like, he almost kind of looked like an albino, because he was an older buck, really gray.
Super white, gray?
Yeah, okay. Then he had like a double throat patch and just looked like a freaking chunk of a buck. Because, I mean, his belly literally hit the ground when he was walking. And so I spotted some antlers moving, and I kind of waited there for a minute. And about 5 minutes later, when he turned to the right a little bit, I could see that coat hanger cheater on the one side. I looked over to Russ, and I'm like, "Dude, you're not going to believe." I said, "He's right here, 150 yards right here below us, dude, just bedded down." And Russ is like, "There's no way, dude." He said, "Me and your dad's been here every day for the last 4 days and haven't seen him." I said, "Dude, he's right there." I said, "Get one locked and loaded, bro." So he put one in. And I kind of made a little bit of a sound just to kind of get him to stand up so he could get a good shot on him. And as soon as I made the little meh sound, that buck stood up, and he couldn't see him at first. And I'm like, "Oh man, here we go. He's not going to get the shot off."
Shit.
But anyways, I said, "Dude," I was whispering as quiet as I could. I'm like, "Come on, Russ." I said, "This has got to happen, bro. Cause we're never going to see him again." And so he said, I got him. And then, I mean, it was 10 seconds later, and he shot, and that buck maybe went, 20 yards. But I mean, I don't know how long all of us have been sitting on that quakey pass, but to me, how that's helped me to hunt today from that experience is just having patience and persistence paying off for you. You don't always have to be going around the woods like a mad dog trying to kick up everything. If you know something's going to come across there, just have patience. That's what I've had to gain is more patience.
Just kind of wrangle yourself in a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I'm more of the guy that's like, oh, let's go hike 20 miles and see if we can kick something up through the woods. But after that experience, it kind of slowed me down thinking, hey, you're probably missing a lot of stuff in the woods the more you're walking instead of just sitting and glassing through the trees and stuff like that.
Yeah, I've always found, I used to be a big time still hunter. I used to like to constantly be, but I go super slow, I wasn't like traipsing through the woods super fast, but I would just go real slow, but I'd like to walk. I was like you, I didn't really like to, really hated sitting stands, and I didn't really love, I think I didn't really love it because I wasn't really good at it yet, was glassing. I wasn't big on either one. So I'd much rather just kind of cover country. And then I realized, I mean, it's been over 20 years now, but I much, much, much rather go sit on a point and use my binos, find something, and then put some work on the boot leather. I'm kind of happy that it went that way, like that my progression was that, because I learned a lot of country by walking around. When you spot something up from the glass, and you go to put a move on it, it's always different than what you see in the glass. But if you have been over there before, it's completely different. You got a better understanding. You got a 3D view of it when you're looking through your binos versus, just what you can tell from the binos. So I did learn a lot walking around and still hunting and doing that stuff. And I'm glad I still have that as like a, fall back on type tactic. But I do prefer glassing now much more over anything, over any other style of hunting. So
yeah, that's kind of how we do a lot of our stuff too, is we'll go out on a big point to where we can glass like 360 degrees and then glass something up, or there'll be some spots on the ranch where you can't really do that, so you kind of just have to mosey through the woods and sit by water holes or sit places where they're in between their bedding and their water areas are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So what you got for us next?
So these next two stories are, I get really excited when I see stuff. And so my earlier days, I was more of a hurry guy, and it kind of backfired on me. So I've got a couple of those stories that's kind of helped me calm down. So like if I see something, I don't hurry my client or myself to shoot something, because in these two stories, I'll tell you that, I mean, there was some big bucks that got wounded and we never did recover them. But if I would have had the patience to just settle down instead of hurry the hunter from shooting it, then we'd have had both bucks. The first one was my buddy from Virginia, Ira. He was out here with his boy in Utah hunting mule deer with me. And my dad had shot the buck's brother during the velvet season, 1st of September. And Ira, he usually comes the second week of October. And so I'd had my eyes locked on this other buck probably for 3 weeks, and I was kind of saving him for him. And so when they came into town, I'm like, this should be a chip shot. I know exactly where the buck is. I've been watching him. And Ira, he was like, oh yeah, I got this new Gunworks gun that can shoot 1,000 yards. So I'm like, oh, sweet, that'll be, because the buck normally was in between like 300 and 500 yards every time I was videoing him. Okay. So the first night we went over and just kind of skimmed the property just to see if he was over there. And so we kind of stayed way back and just used the spotting scope to watch him. And he was right on the fence line of our ranch and the neighbor's ranch. And so when I got the spotting scope on him, he was literally what, like 40 yards on the neighbor's fence. Mm. Right. I mean, he was close to the fence line. So I knew that next morning he was going to be on our side of the fence at the pond to come get a drink. And so I said, we'll wake up and get over here a half hour before dark. And then we'll just kind of creep up over the edge to where we can set you guys up on a nice rest. And then as soon as he stands up or comes from the pond back towards the fence, and we can take a shot at him. And so the next morning came, we got in the Ranger and drove over. It was about a 15-mile drive, and got over there about 25 minutes before dark, and got all of our stuff and just kind of hiked about a half mile up to where the top, right at the top of the ridge. And we waited there and just glassed until enough daylight came to where we could see everything. And there was probably 25 does, and it took probably 45 minutes to an hour to spot him, because the sagebrush where he was pretty tall. So unless he was moving his antlers, it was hard to see him. And then mm-hmm. it was about 2.5 hours later, he finally stood up and started feeding, and I ranged, and he was at 5:45. And so he wanted his kid to take the first shot. And so he was going to back him up in case, because they both had deer tags. And so his son got ready, and he said, range it for him again. I said, yeah, he's right at 5:46 now. So his kid shot right over the back of him. Hmm. And that got the buck really alerted. I said, he's out at 5:50 now. And so Ira took his shot, and he hit him. And the buck actually went down and then got back up. So I told his boy, I said, put another one in, dude. And his kid shot right behind him that time. And after that shot, he jumped the fence. And I said, you can't shoot anymore. I said, we're going to have to call the neighboring ranch to see if we can go after him and check for blood. And so I called the ranch owners, and they were cool. They came down, and we found the blood on our side of the fence, and then we seen where he jumped and left a lot of blood over the fence. And then they had a road right there, and so you can see where he walked over and down into some thick stuff. But we scoured that area for, I don't know, 3 or 4 hours, and we couldn't kick him back up. And we never ended up finding that buck. But I mean, he was probably a 185 to 190 inch buck. So yeah, I mean, every year to me, I try to get a little more patient instead of the hurry shot type stuff. Another big lesson for me.
I get that. And as a guide, sometimes we forget that the guy that's behind the trigger is not us, even though you may be able to make that shot under that kind of pressure and, you know, whatever, but the guy that's coming with you may not have that experience, may not have that, you know, be practiced in that. And, you know, what seems like a slam dunk situation may not be, you know. And I did the same thing this year, and it pains me because I know it. And I think what it is that, so I'll tell my story real quick, is basically it was a late season elk hunt. And man, we had a freaking tough hunt. It was day six of a 7-day hunt, and we had yet to see, well, I shouldn't say see, I saw one branch antler bull before that, and it got shot out from underneath us before we can get to it. But that this was the only, we seen a couple spikes, and I had talked to my client out of shooting the spikes, because he would have been happy to shoot a spike, and I should have let him shoot it, but I just thought we could do better, you know. And finally we find this bull, and one, he's shooting my rifle, so he hadn't shot it before, but I know he's a good shot, you know. And I think this bull was at 5, right about the same, like 5:50, something like that. And I know this guy's, you know, well practiced out past 800, you know. So in my head, I'm thinking slam dunk. And for myself, I'm like, this is a dead bull. Like, if I was behind the gun, I'd feel 100% confident that we would kill it. But, you know, he was having a hard time finding it in the scope, which always starts speeding up the situation. Even though the bull was bedded, he wasn't going anywhere. So there really was, like, the reality was that there really was no, and it was the middle of the day, well, not really the middle of the day, but it was early enough in the afternoon that I had plenty of time. So I wasn't fighting light. It's not like he was moving and going to feed out of this window. He was literally bedded. And in the one spot that we could see him, you know, to make a shot was this one perch. So we couldn't really get any closer or anything like that. So that our shooting position was our shooting position. We either had to get to like 50 yards to kill him or shoot him from where we were. But it was one of those situations that, like, I had plenty of time. I should have had him dry fire. I should have, you know, like, I know all these things. I've been doing this for a long time, and we do it with customers or clients all the time. I've done it with my kids. But for some reason, I was like, I felt rushed. And it, which in turn, I rushed him a little bit. You know, I was like, come on, come on, come on. You get, like, helped him find him in the scope, got him. Oh, yeah, you got him. You see him. Da, 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 da. Yeah, okay, great. Okay. And I'm like, all right, give me a second. Let me get back behind my binos. And you can shoot. And I didn't even get back in the binos, and he shoots. So I don't even know where he hit. The bull gets up. Now we're in a rush situation because the bull is going to leave the only window of opportunity that we have to shoot. So now I am really rushing him, get him back on the bull. And again, before I get back to my binoculars, and luckily I had one of my guides with me, and he was in his binos and saw it, and he shoots and hit this bull, from what he could tell, super high. Okay. The bull jumps off of where he's at, dives down into this, like, nasty wash, just thick oak brush and super just nasty thick stuff. I went down there, I found one little splotch of blood, and I couldn't, and I tried the whole rest of that afternoon and the whole next day, half day. And we couldn't find the bull. Couldn't find blood other than that one spot. And it haunts me because I know that if I would have approached that situation differently, we probably would have had that bull dead, you know? So, but.
Yeah. Yeah. I've had a couple similar experiences where I've had guys come out and they're like, oh, don't let me shoot a deer that's under like 170, 180. And I'm like, all right, no problem. And then we'll get walking through the woods, dude. And I had one guy, we literally, the first night he was out hunting with me, we're walking through the Quakies, and dude, all I hear is a gunshot right behind me. He didn't even say he was going to shoot or nothing.
Oh, Jesus.
And I'm like, dude, what are you doing? He's like, oh, dude, I just shot a freaking stud deer. I'm like, you didn't even let me glass it before you shot. He's like, oh, no, dude, I can see it down there in the trees. I'm like, did you even hit it? He's like, oh, I'm pretty sure it only went like 20 yards. And I'm like, all right, take your shell out and let's go down there and take a look at it. Dude, we get down there. He shot this freaking little tiny, it was maybe like a
120.
12-inch, yeah, 12-inch 2x2. And I'm like, are you serious, bro? He's like, oh, man. He's like, I must have been seeing tree branches, because he's like, I thought that thing was like 27, 28 inches wide. And I'm like, oh, man. And I mean, you feel bad for the person, but it's like, you didn't even tell him to shoot, or you didn't even like have any control over it.
Yeah. You know, that's not on you though. You know, the only thing about those situations is, like, you know, have a really long conversation with your clients before you go out. You know, one, it's for a safety thing, obviously.
Yeah.
And,
yep.
And two, I always give people that, you know, you're hiring me, right? So let me do what I do. And then, when it's time for you to do what you got to do, then, you know, but.
Yeah, I've had a few elk hunters that come out and we'll get out in the woods and they'll start breaking out their elk calls. And I'm like, nah, I'm like, that's what you hired me to do. And they're like, oh, we can't just call with you. I'm like, no, because it'll mess everything up. I said, just trust me. I said, I've been doing it a long time. I said, I know where these animals are. And I said, believe me, I'll make it be a good time for you if you'll just stick behind me. And normally guys are pretty good, but then you get a few of them, you'll be calling elk and you'll hear some weird cow noise and you'll look behind you and freaking guy's pulled out a squeeze me and he's back there behind you hitting it.
Yeah. Yeah, you just want to be a part of the experience. I get it.
Yeah. Yep. But yeah, I mean, I had another experience in Nebraska a few years ago. Mm-hmm. I had one of my buddies down there in Nebraska he was from Minnesota, and I've actually kind of grown to love Nebraska. I go out there every year hunting now, but we were hunting whitetails in Nebraska, and he'd never killed one, and we had a pretty good lease on a pretty good chunk of property that carried some big whitetails, and I think it was the second night we were there, we'd had this 160 to 170 class whitetail.
Oh, nice.
On trail camera all summer, and we'd only seen him a few times because he was real elusive. He didn't want to be seen, and he would always hang by the cow wrangler's house because he knew it was safe right there. Once in a while, you'd catch him moseying around with a couple of does, but one morning we were out hunting in this drainage, and I had him and his buddy, locked eyes on two does that were going up the drainage right in front of us about 250 yards. You could just see the antlers going up the ridge, but you couldn't really tell how big he was. And I said, we need to try to get low in this drainage to where they can't see us and kind of follow them up. So when they up at the top, it was kind of like a half circle where they would come out and feed. And so we got in that little, it was probably like a 5 foot, like a ditch type deal. Okay. Where they couldn't see us, and we started walking up. And
this is a rifle hunt or a bow?
No, it was a rifle hunt.
Okay.
And this was the first time I'd ever guided whitetail on, and it was spot and stalk. So I mean, I knew how skittish they were. So we were walking up the ditch, and all of a sudden, I see one of the does come across, and I'm like, "Dude, we got to get down." I said, "He's going to be coming right there." And the problem with Brian is every time before he would come on a hunt with me, I'd always tell him, I'm like, "Dude, shoot your gun." I'm like, "I don't care if it was a $4,000 gun, you still need to shoot it." Mm-hmm. To get used to it. Well, anyways, here come that buck, and I put my binoculars up, and as usual, I freaking go nuts, dude, and tried to hurry the shot. And I'm like, "Dude, he's 180 yards, and I'm like freaking out, because I'm like, man, this would be so badass to be my first guided whitetail spot in stock, a big whitetail. And he's all, "I can't see him." I'm like, "Dude, he's right there, straight ahead." He finally gets on him, and he's shaking because it's his first whitetail, and he can see how big it is through the scope. And
right,
he freaking lets it rip. And I mean, you can hear the thwop, and the two does go right, and the buck comes around the left. I'm like, "Dude, that sounded like a solid hit when you hit him." I said, "If he wasn't hit, he would have went with them does." And so I said, "Let's just sit here for an hour and just let him go so we don't bump him again." And I said, "Dude, how'd you feel about the shot?" And he's like, "Oh, I don't know. I was shaking pretty hard." So we waited. After that hour went by, we walked up there. And there was probably a 2.5 foot ring of blood. So I'm like, "Heck yeah, dude. I think he's going to be laying right around here to the left side." We start walking around there. Never bump him, and as we keep going around tracking the blood, it just gets less and less and less and less. And we went around there, and we couldn't see him. We never bumped into him again, and we looked for, I don't know, 4 or 5 hours, and couldn't see nothing. And so we marked the last spot where we got on or last seen the blood, and went and grabbed some lunch, and then came back, and then pretty much spent the next day and a half trying to find him. And we could never find that buck. And all I can think is he might have hit like the front of him, and that's why he spun around, because he hit like the front part of him.
Yeah.
But yeah, he was pretty disappointed. He's like, "Man, that wasn't that far of a shot." I'm like, "Dude, I tell you, you need to shoot your rifle." He thinks just because he buys like a crazy expensive rifle, it's just automatically gonna shoot golden every time he shoots it.
Yeah. Yeah, you need time. You need time behind your equipment for sure. It goes with anything.
But yeah, I mean, I've I've got so many stories, man. I don't know how many more stories you want me to share, but
yeah, we got time for one more if you got another.
Yeah, I mean, I got one that was pretty memorable.
Sure.
Hunt that I could. So we had one of our friends from, he's a doctor in New York, and so he had been wanting to finish up his North American 29 with his bow.
Oh, nice.
He shot everything he needed except for a Shiras moose, and he'd been on like six Shiras moose hunts. And so he flew out here the last 2 weeks of October to hunt with us, and it was like the second to last day, and I had just got done with I'd been guiding an elk hunter, and my brother had spotted a really nice moose over in one of these canyons not too far from our cabin. And so my dad's like, hey, you want to come over here and see if you can help us find this big bull that your brother found this morning? And so I said, yeah, I'll go with you. And so I hopped in his Jeep, and we went over, got on top of the ridge, and was just glassing trying to find this bull because my brother had seen him like 2 hours previous. And my dad and the doc was over on, I don't know, probably 500 or 600 yards to the left of me, and I kind of went up onto a little higher perch so I could see, and probably took, I don't know, half hour, and then I could see that bull coming up through the bottom way down. He was probably 800-900 yards away, and I hurry and did some hand signals to my dad saying, hey, I got him spotted. He's right over here. And so I started grunting, and dude, I kid you not, I grunted that freaking bull. When my dad ranged him, first time I started calling him, he was like 800 or 750 yards away. Dude, he came all the way up. We were standing behind a huge rock outcropping, and then we had the dock set up. As soon as that moose came right up past the rock outcropping, he'd be like 16 yards away with his bow, and I just kept calling. My dad's like, keep calling. He's coming fast. He got right up there, and I could hear him panting and grunting, and the doc was over there shaking pretty good, trying to get his bow pulled back. And next thing I knew, my dad's like, here he comes. He's going to be out here in like 2 seconds. He said, let out one more grunt. I grunted, and that bull came out and started raking some brush. And I think he ended up being like 17 yards when the doc shot with his bow. And he went about 50 yards, and we kind of had to get back on him to get a second shot. But he ended up getting that bull. I think he was like 46 inches wide, but yeah, that was a pretty cool experience to call that bull in to finish up his North American 29 with his bow.
That's awesome. Yeah, I've been moose hunting a couple times, and I've gotten skunked every single time, not even seeing a legal bull. So it's definitely on the bucket list. Hopefully one of these days I'll draw a tag.
Yeah. Yeah, those moose hunts, they book up fast because we get a lot of SCI guys that know that they're guaranteed landowner tags, and so they...
Oh, you guys have guaranteed tags? Oh, no shit.
Yeah. Yeah, they scoop them up pretty fast. Yep.
I bet. That's probably way more money than I can ever spend on a tag anyway, so...
But...
Not that I'd even try. Yeah, I went to Canada a couple times, but... And I've been on the alternate list like twice in Maine. So I'm assuming one of these years I'm going to draw that tag, Maine or New Hampshire.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah, they're definitely fun, huh? That's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I got a bunch of points in Utah and a couple other states too, I think Colorado.
So. Yeah, I was going to say, we got a place in Colorado now too, so if you have a lot of points there.
I don't have a lot of points. I don't think. See, Colorado, I started really late with Colorado. I think I only got like 6 or 7 points there. But
yeah, we usually kill some pretty good bucks. That
Wyoming and Utah should have over 11.
Yeah. What unit in Utah have you been putting in for?
I got to look. I think Slope.
Is it the South Slope or the North Slope?
I think it'd be South Slope. I had a deer tag up there once, and I seen a couple of moose, and I think that's what I was putting in there. The last 2 years, I think I just put in for bonus point only because I knew if I got drawn, it'd be tough for me to go. But, yeah, I think this year I did the same. So next year I'll start applying again for actual units. So I don't
know.
Yeah,
I think the Oak Creek and the San Juan, they have some.
I looked at Oak Creek. I think as Oak Creek has mountain goats too, right?
I'm not sure on that, but I do know the Oak Creek's probably one of the best units in the state now. I think it's kind of overtaken the Henrys. The Poncegon's a good unit as well.
Oh, I didn't know Ponce had moose. Yeah, man. I'll have to talk to you there for my next endeavors. Well, speaking of the Henrys, I got Henry's tag this year for deer.
You do have a Henry's tag?
I do. South.
Dang, dude. What?
The South. Weapon? The first rifle, I think. It's in October.
Dang, dude. That should be a pretty solid hunt.
Yeah. I have a little bit of knowledge of the area, and I've had some friends that I've helped out on other hunts that offer to kind of throw me a little information. But the shitty part is, it's because it's in October and I'm so busy in July, August, and September that I don't think I'm going to be able to get up there. So I'm going to be hunting kind of blindly, I think. I got a buddy of mine that lives really close, and we've hunted together, and you know, we've known each other now probably about 12 years and stuff, and he offered maybe to get over there and do a little eyes on scouting for me. So if that happens, I'll have at least that little bit, but I don't know if I'm going to get over there, man. That's my only thing, and it's such a shitty thing because it's a great tag. I know it's not what it used to be. I know it ain't a 200 around every corner, but I'd love to pull a 180 or better out of there.
Yeah, maybe I'll have to make a couple trips down there for you.
Sounds like a plan. Don't promise if you're not willing to do it, because I'd take you up on it.
Yeah. I'm waiting for my Tacoma. I didn't realize how the car manufacturing thing got so screwed up.
Oh my God, it's bad.
Toyota Tacoma, man, and it's like trying to dig for gold, dude.
I'm the same boat, so my wife's lease is almost up. And we've been looking now since, man, I don't know, at least 5 months. And we cannot get her the truck that she wants. It's like, it's a Chevy, you know, she wants not a Chevy, but it's a GMC. She has a GMC Denali now. And Yukon Denali. And we're trying to get the same truck, just a newer model. You know, she's got a 2018. And the lease is up.
Yeah.
So it's like pulling teeth. And when they come in, they're putting premiums on them. So you have to put like more money down and this and that. It's just like, fuck, man. I don't know. I'm like, babe, we might have to just buy the one that you have. And of course, you don't want to hear that. But
yeah,
my Greek American princess, she's got to have, she's Mrs. Fancy Pants. But
yeah.
I can't talk though, so I drive a Raptor.
Yeah. if I end up getting me a truck here pretty soon, dude, I'd be more than happy to go down there and do some.
Well, I'll definitely be in your debt, man, if you do that. That's what this business is all. I found that you do things for people, it usually comes back around. And I've been trading hunts and trading information with people for years, and it's really been good for me.
Yeah.
I just got to say, the one really good thing that has come out of a social media is the relationships that I developed with, you know, with fellow hunters across the country. And it's allowed me to do, you know, some pretty fantastic things. So,
yeah, for sure. Same with me. I've met a lot of awesome dudes through social media.
Oh, awesome. So speaking of social media, why don't you give us a little info where people can find you? And
So if you want to check out my stuff on social media, it's just at Muley Tynes, MULEYTINES. And there's a lot of lately I've been getting a lot of scam pages because of all the giveaways and stuff I do, but if you see any of those, if you'd report them, I'd appreciate it. But yeah, that's where you can kind of find me. Try to post as much as good content as I can to keep the itch going for guys all year long for hunting.
Awesome. Well, thanks for coming on, man, and sharing stories with us. We'll definitely keep in touch. And like I said, I might have to take you up on your offer there. we'll see what happens.
Yeah, if I can get that Tacoma that I've been looking at. I mean, they said it would be here within the next couple weeks. I mean, I'd love to go down there and freaking video some stud bucks. It'd just give me more content to post as well.
Perfect. All right, well, I will talk to you soon. I'll let you get back to your day, man. Thanks a lot.
All right, take it easy, John.
All right. Well, that's it for this episode. Thanks for tuning in. Be sure to check out daysinthewild.com and be sure to give us a review on iTunes. Thank you, and we'll check you out on the next episode.